Paradigm Broadcast Platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of elected programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows, go to www.ipbn-fm.
Broadcasting live, geosynchronous orbit with eccentricity and non-specific inclination, the Situation Room, with your hosts, Robbie, John, and Scott.
Well, now that I think we're hot on the microphone, and if John hasn't already announced his presence, this is Scotty Roberts here with Rocky Stucci and John Ward over there in Sweden, respectively, and Hudson, Wisconsin, and me in New Richmond, Wisconsin. A stone's throw from Rocky Stucci. This is the Situation Room. And I like to say that this is where we handle all the crap in the global matrix of confusion. And this is one of the few places that you can come on air to hear sensible talk, reasoned minds, common sense, and critical thinking all wrapped up together.
Are you sure we're capable of that?
John, I was going to ask, do you think we're capable of pulling that off today?
I would hope so. Inshallah, by the will of the pantheon of gods in heaven, we will do so.
Okay.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, Rocky.
That, I'm sure Rocky can pull it off with his meatballs.
I can do it with my meatballs, but man, gentlemen, there is a lot to cover. You know, we said this a couple weeks ago that sometimes just doing this one time a week is not enough with everything that's happened within our own country and worldwide. There's a lot to cover.
I got to tell you, ain't that the truth? And that's the problem, is that there is so much going on, and there is so much that we could be talking about, that to pick and choose, we're kind of still hitting those topics that are the topics that everybody's talking about, at least in the news and so on. We'll try to occasionally get to some things that you don't see regularly, but man, some of the big stuff is really, I got to tell you, boys, there is something that is, to say it pisses me off is a very light way to put it, because there's so much more to this. And these are things we've talked about before. But I know, John, you wrote something about this today, or at least posted an article that ISIS is on the edge of threatening the ancient city of Palmyra. And if they take over this town that's next to it, that would be the end of this amazing archaeological site, historic site. You have your fingers a little more on the pulse of this. What is, tell us all, what's Palmyra, and what's going to happen if ISIS gets their hands on it?
Well, first and foremost, if you don't know about Palmyra and you don't know about the site, just Google it. That's all I can say. Just quickly, just. And
that's, by the way, it's just spelled.
I'm giving you this live now. We've got the BBC on here live. And ISIS militants in Syria, the militants advance on the ancient site of Palmyra, is all coming in live. And they're showing damage to the pillars of the ancient site, which have been hit by either mortar fire or live ammunition. If you don't know about this site, just Google it quickly, look at it, get as much information as you can on it. It is a gemstone, to say the least. It is most of the ancient city itself, the amphitheater, the temple of Baal. It's so intact. It's so pristine. It blows your mind. It really does. It's an amazing site, both historically, archaeologically. It is everything that encompasses not just archaeology, but the history itself. This is mankind's history. This belongs to the international community. It belongs globally. It doesn't belong to any one person or any one nation. If ISIS takes the town next to it, they will, I would expect, unless intervention takes place, they will level it to the ground. And that's not just a loss. It's an atrocity. That's next to genocide in my book. And as I wrote today, the UN, because at the end of the day, the UN have the power to do this. The UN has not the need or necessity, but they've got to mobilize troops. They've got to send the troops in. There's got to be boots on the ground. Something has to take place here. We can no longer stand by idly and use words like "it pisses me off," harsh words though they are, Mr. Scotty. We can't just sit by anymore. This is ridiculous.
Well, this is the thing too, and there's been the rhetoric that we hear out there where people say, "Well, we need to bomb or we need to attack or whatever like that." The problem with that is becoming more and more of a reality because this is a group that is expanding, and it is a group that is taking over that region of the world, and they're destroying human heritage. They're destroying not just people can cluck and bat an eye at the fact, oh well, it's Syrian history is being exploited and destroyed. Well, it's more than that. That's human history. This is the cradle of civilization. This is our history, and they are meticulously taking it apart. I think give your opinions, guys, but I think it's not just for political gain, but it's for religious gain. It's something that they feel is...
there is no religious gain in this at all.
Well,
this
there, now John stated his part.
Bearded backpackers who are a bunch of idiots, and I don't care where they are, whether they're in Europe, whether they're in America, whether they're in Syria, wherever they are in Iraq, and if they're listening, you're idiots. You are a bunch of idiots. You're mindless. You need to stop what you're doing. You need to look at what you're doing. It's just ridiculous. We can't just sit by and let this happen anymore. I'm so fed up with the rhetoric that I hear. I go into all the different social networks and I see these people posting a different posting saying that they want to get, oh, well, we've got to feel sorry for them. We've got to look to their needs. We've got to try and understand. Understand my ass. We don't need to understand anything. What we need to do is act and act quickly and soon and decisively. We need to send the troops in, and we need to send them in now to bring this to an end. We've had enough suffering in Syria and Iraq. The Syrians, the Iraqis, the Yemenis, the whole bloody place.
Now, John, there was a time not long ago where you thought military action would be a really bad move on the world's part against ISIS. Would you say that you've kind of changed that position?
I would say that I have changed that position only by my reaction to what is taking place today. I would like to say that I still think it's a bad idea. If I can backtrack just a second and calm down for a second.
Backtrack all you want. You could be running for office in the United States.
But I do think at the end of the day, we've got to a point where what else can we do? Seriously, what else can we do? The coalition, the airstrikes, the U.S.-led airstrikes, they are having an effect. They are destroying certain key elements of the ISIS infrastructure, personnel and military equipment, and the ability to maneuver from space to space and so forth. However, what is clear and evident is that ISIS is still a very well-oiled machine and is still capable of taking on the most modern infrastructure. And I mean military infrastructure. And I repeat what I said a few weeks ago when we talked about the Iraqi army. You've got to remember, the Iraqi army is, in de facto, the American army. They're completely kitted out by the American military machine. And so if you can take a bunch of goat herders and arm them with Kalashnikovs and other equipment and take on the whole might of the Iraqi army, there's something in that sentence that doesn't ring true to me. But they're still winning and they're still taking them on. and they're still gaining ground. And now they're threatening this, the site of Palmyra. It just beggars belief if they were able to actually destroy this. I just hope the people, the local people, will rally. Like, and Maria actually said this earlier when I was when we first read the news, and we both looked at each other and just aghast, really. And I made a flippant comment, and she said, well, that's a nice negative comment. Why don't you think positively and think about the people like they did during the revolution in Egypt, where, one, they surrounded the museum in Cairo and Tahrir Square and defended.
Well, do you think ISIS would take any never mind to the local people surrounding archaeological sites, or would they just mow right through them?
Well, this is where I hope the local people are able to mobilize, again, using what Maria said, like they did also with Karnak and the temples on the West Bank, the Valley of the Kings and the Ramesseum and Medinet Habu, where the people, the local people of Gezira and the local people of the local villages all got together and safeguarded these sites. And I would like to hope that they would do the same. Whether they would be successful against, again, this well-oiled military machine that is ISIS is questionable. But if they were backed up by the Iraqi army and the Syrian army and the coalition with airstrikes, I think they could do it. They could pull this off.
Let me ask you guys something. What was the repercussion last month? And help me with the pronunciation. Nimrud?
No repercussion at all.
So there was no repercussion. Nothing happened.
They completely blew up an ancient city with no repercussion, and now they're at jeopardy of doing it again. And I think our problem is, now I'm just speaking personally here, I think our problem is that we're depending and waiting on the governments to act to this. And kind of what you're referring to with Egypt, John, I think the time has to come where the people actually – we need to take a stand. Well, as a people of this earth and the true history of this earth, how long are we going to sit back and just watch this happen without not acting?
Well, the problem you have here, and this is hard for some people to comprehend exactly what's going on over there, but ISIS is the kind of group, militant group, an atrocious group that is going to commit kinds of acts like, let me use this as an illustration. It's a much smaller, maybe a silly illustration, but it would be like this. It would be as if there were guys that in your neighborhood that were trying to draw you out of your house into a fight. You said, I'm not going to fight you. I'm not gonna shed my blood on wasted on you guys. You're the rest of the neighborhood's problem. But then they come and they start kicking over your, let's say, pissing in your flower pots, and they start kicking over your lawn ornaments, your pink flamingos, and they crush them under their feet, and they start bashing the headlights out of your car while you're sitting in your house looking. This is, in a sense, what you're getting with this. There is a bullying is too trite a way to put it, but it's a way to illustrate it. There is a certain grand level of bullying that's going on over there in that they are attempting to wipe out the history of a people, wipe out a history of a civilization. And they're attempting at the same time to draw the world in to fight them because they believe in the religious side. I've heard of this, and John, comment on this. The religious side I've heard is that they believe they're bringing on an Armageddon, and this is where they will get their Vestal Virgins when they die and all of this stuff.
See me, I'll give you a Vestal Virgin.
Yeah, but
my boot up your ass. You know, it's ridiculous because we're getting to a point now, and even us guys talking on the here on the Situation Room, we've done this for months now, where we've discussed the topic of ISIS, and I'm the first one to put my hand in the air and say that I get hot under the collar about it. At the same time, I try. To see both sides of an argument, if there is two sides to an argument. And I try to understand what's going through their mind, what's the mindset, what's the end game, what's the result they're looking for. I look at the incidences that are taking place within Europe, where we've got young children and young parents who are leaving the safety of the West to go and fight alongside ISIS in Syria and Iraq. And I try to think, well, what is it that spurred them on? What is it that's the motivator here? What happened within their family unit? What happened within their community? Who let who down? Did the community let them down? Did their religion let them down? Did their imam let them down? Did their parents let them down? Where do we point the fingers? Where do we start? And I think it's about time we started to point the fingers at ourselves And I think we are to blame. We're the ones who've let people down. And it goes back, I think, to what I've said time and time again, Scotty and Rocky. We've discussed this about responsibilities. And I think we have a responsibility, as we always have had and continue to have, to try and maintain a stance where, not a neutral stance, so to speak, but a stance where we can discuss in a sensible, cohesive manner what the problems are and what lays ahead. And if ISIS continues to do what they're doing, thank you, Maria. And if ISIS continues to do what they're doing, then God help us all.
Thank you, Maria.
Gathering strength. I think they're going from strength to strength. And that's
Yours too, Rocky, by the way?
I did before we went live.
Let's thank Maria together. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you for
all right, John. John, please proceed. Didn't mean to interrupt there.
I'm about to give you a Vestal Virgin. Now,
John, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying about the history and the backgrounds and the upcomings and, their great-great-uncle was whatever, and this is generational trauma. But it's no different than bullying in school. We can't justify that because the parents came up from a bad upbringing. There is no justification. This needs to stop.
I don't say there is justification. There is no justification.
Right.
That's my point. I think we've tried. We've been politically correct. Sometimes, as I said, and go back and I say that we've lost our cool. We've become heated under the collar. We've become emotive about it.
Right.
And as I said, I'm the first one to put my hand in the hair and say, I've lost my cool over it. It's a very emotive subject. But I think now's the time to stop dancing around in the playground. Stop being politically correct. Stop pandering down to the liberals.
Great.
Stop pandering down to the politicians. And tackle this issue head on. It's a religious issue now. It's not a cultural issue. It's a religious issue. We have a problem within our societies. And I'm not talking about Syria and Iraq now. I'm talking about within our societies, within the West. We have a problem. We're fueling this. And that's disconcerting. That's my concern now.
Well, what do we do with all of the... What do we do with all the... What do we do with all the arguments that are out there? And you're going to get, whenever you bring up a topic like this and you talk about some kind of geopolitical atrocity like this, it starts to go on. And then you hear all the arguments, it was America and the CIA that started it all. And to me, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me where they came from. It doesn't matter to me what we had done in the past or any nation had done in the past in their negotiations with these groups when they were under different names and in a different political atmosphere. It doesn't matter anymore. What matters is what exists now. Because I can tell you what, if I bring it down to the simplistic illustration again, there are bullies that I have negotiated with, so to speak, over the years that become something totally different later on. What they are now may not have been what they were when we negotiated with them or used them for our own purposes over there, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter a rat's ass. As far as I'm concerned, what matters is what they are doing now. This is like the argument that says, well, you can't criticize the current president because the past president did the same kind of a thing. Well, it doesn't matter. The past president isn't in office. It's the current president who's doing things. So it doesn't really matter. What matters is what is doing. And to quote Bill Clinton, all depends on what your definition of is. And let's bring that into current day. It all depends on what your definition of ISIS is or is. IS is all about. And right now, and John, before you carry on, just so people get a little better picture of what's going on here, ISIS is within about a mile and a half, under a mile and a half from the UNESCO World Heritage Site of Palmyra. And they're battling government forces for the control of the town that's right next to it, which is Tadmur, Tadmur, if you want to look all this up, folks. Syria's antiquities chief has warned that if IS or ISIS seizes Palmyra, it'll destroy everything that exists there. And if you want some photo references to what you're looking at, you've probably seen the site before, not knowing what it is in photographs or documentaries or whatever, go look up Palmyra. And the group they've ransacked and demolished several ancient sites in Iraq already. And Palmyra has already suffered some damage due to the 4-year civil war that's gone on there. And it's situated strategically important area on the road between the capital of Damascus and the contested eastern city of Deir ez-Zor. And it's close to the gas fields and all of this. And so it's an international catastrophe that is brewing right now. And the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said that ISIS militants were mounting an assault on Tadmor. And that's the modern town that lies right next to the ruins. And it's in great danger right now of being destroyed forever. Now, we're not just talking the human lives in the town, which is atrocity all by itself. But you're also talking about not only are they destroying the people and taking over, they want to rule the people that are left. They want to destroy any heritage that's associated with them. And human history to reestablish their own, in a sense, rewrite their own book on world history. And so this is what we're facing with this. This is why I think it's important. And John, you had started on something else. You wanted to shift the gears just a little bit. Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to shift the gears with regards my concerns with these. And I want to use the word, I'm going to use the modernism of homegrown terrorist. But I want to move away from the word terrorist because I think it's a word that's used too flippantly and is too sensationalized now. But I'm talking about the younger generation who feel that that their modern society in which they live, their society, their community, their family, their friends, their peers, do not offer them the same excitement or adventure or future that ISIS seems to offer them in Syria and Iraq, and that these younger generations and other persons are susceptible to the radicalization that is being spouted across the social networks and clubs and other means of communicating this new idealistic interpretation of Islam that ISIS seemed to purport. And to me, that is where I look in the mirror and I point my finger at myself and say, what can I do to help these people?
Like, what can we do?
Well, and then I turn to Rocky, and you see, I look to Rocky, and I see the way in which he helps people. I see the way in which he intervenes on different levels within his community, be that drug problems, be that health problems, be that mental problems, and so forth, where he has his interventions. And I look to us, and I think we have to throw out with the bathwater the religious connotations here, be that I'm a Christian. I'm not a Christian, but if I was a Christian, throw that out. I'm a human being, the same as a Muslim is a human being. I can converse with him or her on the same level and find out what their fears are, find out what their wants and desires are. If it is indeed that they want jihad and that they want to martyr themselves, then I want to understand why.
Well, of course, I would want to know why, too. I would want to know why somebody wants to kill me for no good reason.
I don't think these questions are being asked, Scotty. I don't think they're being asked in a serious arena. I think we're too quick to lay blame at the foot or the feet, bare feet.
From a European point of view, do you believe that the United States government or the current administration is handling this whole situation with ISIS in a way that asks and answers those questions cogently?
God, no. And nor does my government either, the British government. I don't think any government is asking these correct questions. I think they're leaving it to the communities. They're leaving it to the imams in the local mosques within these communities to deal with these problems. They're leaving it to the teachers who seem to be able to identify the problem students, who seem to be having this kind of transference to radicalization, be that Christian religion or be that Islam. Either way. And I think that system is failing. And I think we need to look inwards. We need to look at each other. We need to look at our neighbors. We need to look to our friends. We need to look to our peers. We need to start asking questions. What's up with Kamal? How is he doing? Regardless of what we may think of Kamal, he may have started to grow a long beard. He may have radicalized already by changing his clothing, changing his outlook, the way in which he no longer talks to different people within his community.
But John, aren't you profiling and stereotyping?
Kind of. I am profiling and I am stereotyping because it's about bloody time we started to throw away the political correctness and deal with the problems head on. I think we need to be talking within our communities. I think we need to be talking to each other. I think we've relied and sat on our fat, glossy asses far too long, listening to the BBC, listening to Fox News, listening to CNN, listening to our politicians, our MPs, our governors, our mayors, our police, our armed forces and so forth, and listening to their rhetoric. I think it's about time we started to ask the questions ourselves in a manner in which we can garner the answers. And hopefully, if we turn just one, it's an accomplishment. If we turn 10, it's amazing. But if you did it on the global scale, wow.
Now, and I'm not everybody
talking about love, and I'm not talking about spirituality and all that crap. I'm talking about communicating. I'm talking about talking, eye to eye contact. If not, talk on social networks. Intervene where you see these postings. Intervene. And I don't mean intervene in a negative, abrupt, Christianized or Islamic kind of using that kind of rhetoric. I mean, intervene in a sensible.
I will tell you this. There is some intervention that I've done in some of the blog posting, and you've seen it out there, not on Facebook, but in other places where I've seen posts being made, particularly when we were dealing with the Israel-Hamas issue and the bombings going on there, and people in the United States hearing that, oh, well, Israel is just as bad because they're bombing people and they're killing civilians and so on. But what people did not realize was that Israel had, for the last 13 years, received over 9,000 air attacks and bombs coming into their country. And so they have constructed, you know, their iron shield to protect them. But they have finally, there are points where you say, when somebody's bombing your neighborhood and you say, stop. Use the British whistle, stop, or I'll say stop again. You know, this is what Israel was doing. But in some of the comments that I saw from people who obviously were not from the United States, but were supporting Hamas, I saw comments there, and I would come right out and I would ask them point blank. I said, so are you telling me that you support teaching your children to hate, to kill, and to die? Are you teaching this to your children? Do you support this? And I would come time and time again and talk to these guys. And I found that I could open avenues to talk to them. I rarely got resistance that was so bad that they just name called me and disappeared. But I took the time to engage. But I did not engage in a way that said, oh, well, let me understand you. Because I said, I don't understand you, and I refuse to attempt to understand you. All I have to do is look at the result of what you say you are supporting. And if you support, and I stuck to that issue as my, it was kind of my flagship issue to hang everything else on, was if you support teaching your children to hate, to kill, and to die, you're worthless. And your cause is worthless. I don't care who your God is. I don't care who your government is. If you support this as a human being, you have lost your humanity. And that was the conversation I was able to engage with them with without saying, hey, you dumb ass. And it did open up, and I didn't use so few words. I brought all this out using those words. And I think you're right. This is what we have right now, is to engage. And the problem with the United States, and I think the West in general, maybe a little less in Europe now because of the attacks that have gone over there and some of that's all that we know in the news that's been going on, Charlie Hebdo, things like that. We've had some similar things like that happen in the United States with the Muhammad art contest. Some may say that was provoking them, but in the United States and within the borders of this country, doing that is First Amendment protected. You can draw a picture of any damn prophet you want to draw a picture of and put it in any mocking position as you want, because that is your First Amendment right to free speech, freedom of press, freedom of expression. You can do those things. However, I think we're insulated here from the rest of this world. We see these things going on and we can talk about them. And then we kind of look at our clock. And we go, oh, God, I'm supposed to be meeting the guys for a beer at 7:00. And then I got the game at 8:00. So I'll have to catch up with you on this next week. I think that's the overall attitude. People will tisk tisk and they will look at this stuff and they will say it's an atrocity. Something has to be done. But at the same time, it does not affect them in their own backyard. And on that, guys, we got to go out to break. And let's pick it up right there when we come back. Folks, you're listening to The Situation Room. This is Scotty Roberts. I've got Rocky Stucci, John Ward over there in Europe right now. And we are tackling and engaging the crap that makes up the global matrix of confusion. So we'll be back and try to do a little bit more of that. Sit tight.
Survivor Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red. I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water. It's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the Big Hot Pastrami Sub from Subway Restaurants.
That does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a Big Hot Pastrami Sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big Hot Pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black. I was set on fire. I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of ending my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The Wounded Warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I've come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please, call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives
stranger.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Situation Room. And I was talking to John and Scotty during the break, and there was one question that I had that I wanted to ask some guys while we were live on the air. If there was a difference, what would the difference be? And this is for both you and John, Scotty, or for Scotty and John.
All right.
What do you think the world reaction would be like if ISIS attacked the Colosseum in Italy compared to what's happening in the Middle East? What do you think the world reaction would be like if something happened like that to the Colosseum?
I think people would feel the Colosseum is, that's a little closer to home. That's Europe now. That's not all the Middle East where everybody's blowing everything up anyway. I also look at it, let me expand on that question. John, you take it from here. What if it was Stonehenge in Great Britain? What if it was the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
I think there would be international condemnation. If it was on our own soil, I know that the governments would rally the troops and send a contingent over to fight ISIS. That would be the first. Or they would join the US-led airstrike coalition. There would be some kind of reaction, a knee-jerk reaction to satisfy the baying crowds. Other than that, it would be tomorrow's chip paper. Because I think we've become so completely blasé. We've become so demoralized, so, what's the word I'm looking for? Not manipulated, because it's not manipulated is the word I'm not looking for.
I want to say, it's insulation and interest, like you say. Remember when all the videos were coming out a couple of months ago about ISIS destroying Nineveh?
Yes.
And we watched this in horror, and everybody was shocked that they're taking sledgehammers and guns and power saws to try to tear apart these ruins. And
I was actually surprised, if I may add for 2 seconds, I was surprised that they were able to use them, because I didn't think any person who's part of the ISIS has an opposable thumb. But please carry on.
That was interesting. And some of them were even taking pictures of it while somebody else was obviously filming it. But what stuns me is that a few days later or a week later or now it's a couple of months later, if you remind people of that, they go, that's right. They're tearing that stuff down over there. What a bunch of idiots. But it doesn't change anything about we're insulated because it's happening somewhere else. It's not here. And we're starting to get little tiny tidbits of things happening on the home front, such as the artist contest that was down in Texas, Garland, Texas, last week. Charlie Hebdo in Paris. And we start to see all of these things in little bits and pieces are coming home to roost. And now you don't know how much is the rhetoric of the idiots in ISIS, but when they start to claim these things and then tell everybody, well, there's 71 different operative closet groups in the United States now that you don't know anything about cells, they will claim this. Is that part of the terror or is that real? We don't know for sure. And it's obvious that they are out to create an atmosphere that is going to draw us into action.
Let me ask both you guys this. Let me ask you, Scotty and John, both you guys have direct friendships with people in the Middle East. What is their take on this? What have you guys found from your conversations with people that live in the Middle East that are good, honorable Muslims? What is their take with the whole ISIS and the radical escalation, I guess?
They're completely abhorrent of it. Every without question, every Muslim friend I have, and some I even call brother, within Egypt and in other countries of the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and so forth, I haven't met one or spoken to one yet who have sided or even partially sided with the actions of ISIS and the creation of the caliphate. None of them. Not one person I've spoken to agrees with this creation and with every action that they have done. It's come always on the heels of condemnation, complete condemnation, and embarrassment.
And there is an embarrassment. That's something I noticed if I can give a little anecdotal story, when we were, John, you and I, and we had some people that were friends of ours and some of our family together at Abu Simbel last year. The big, and those of you who don't know it by name, it's the big monument of Ramses II with the huge, colossal four-seated figures of Ramses down on Lake Nasser. They moved it to about 20, 25, 30 years ago when they opened up the Aswan Dam. But that monument, we're down there, and we had with us our friend and our guide, Tayyib. And I won't give his whole name. Tayyib, he is Egyptian. He is Muslim. And but he's a purist about history. He's a purist about humanity. And he was standing there with us on that beach as the sun was rising that morning to shine on the monument. And by all the news reports, there were 10,000 Egyptians on that beach. Egyptians and I want to say Nubian, Sudanese, down on the beach that morning watching this event. And he looked at me. And you, John, I think you were standing right with me there, and he was talking to both of us. Tayyib, his eyes got a little teary-eyed, and he said, this, he says, makes me happy. This is my people coming to celebrate their ancient history. Because this was all about Ramesses II. This was not about ISIS. This was not about Islam against Christianity or Islam wanting to make itself the only religion in the world. This was about people celebrating their heritage, their ancient heritage, and it brought tears to his eyes. These are the kinds of people that John knows. These are the kinds of people that he has introduced me to his friends, which have some of them become my friends. And I can't say anything as strongly as John can about that because he's lived there for 15 years. I've known some of these people for a year to 2 years. And I will tell you, the people that I have talked to, there is somebody who is in archaeology there. He's an Egyptian. John, you know who I'm talking about. We were sitting on the deck of the boat one afternoon on the Nile, and I was asking him, what do you do with your religious beliefs when you find they conflict with what you know to be fact? And he kind of did the little, you know, the eyes close and the shoulders go up and the hands go up, kind of a, you know, kind of a shrug. He says, you know, the Quran is the Quran. And, you know, my faith is this and my knowledge is this. He said, sometimes they don't cross. And where they do cross, he says, I have to live both of them. I become a dual person. He says, I believe my faith, but I also believe I know the things that contradict my faith to be true. And he fully admitted that. And I think these are the people, Rocky, that I know over there that are in the midst of all this. They want nothing to do with this. As a matter of fact, Tayyib, our friend and guide, he said, I wish this would all end so you could come back here more freely and everybody could come and see that Egypt loves the world and Egypt wants to be here for the world.
That's exactly from both you guys the answer that I wanted to get from you guys, because I want people to understand that our hatred is not towards the Middle East or nor is it towards the Muslim faith. It's towards a percentage of people that are destroying lives, parts of their country, parts of their heritage, and the history of this earth. So I just wanted to bring that back into perspective. And
I think hating ISIS or hating Islam because of ISIS is like saying I hate Christianity because of the KKK.
Right.
They claim to be a Christian organization, and that's the foundation. Does that change Christianity? No. Are there things in both faiths that if you adhered to old versions or old understandings of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, if you adhered to the old things about them without progressing or moving forward and understanding and evolving with humanity and history, the Old Testament, I got to tell you, in Christianity and Judaism, the Old Testament is full of God commanding his people to wipe out people entirely, down to every man, woman, child, babe at the teat, cattle, everything, to wipe them out completely. And that is xenophobia at the least and genocidal at the worst. But this is the same thing that goes on.
Just as a segue there, while you're on the Torah.
Sure.
Palmyra is one of the most, well, actually is one of the ancient Semitic sites. It would be interesting to see what the Israeli reaction will be if ISIS actually draw closer to the site itself. Will they mobilize? Will they do airstrikes? Will they become part of the coalition? Will Saudi Arabia even allow Israel to become part of the coalition? And that's an interesting take on things. It would be interesting to see how they deal with that, because again, that's their heritage. It's their site. It's part and parcel of the Judaic history. And if ISIS are allowed to destroy it and eradicate it, it's again, it's tantamount to removing history of Judaism itself. It's ripping the core of the Torah. As we've mentioned so many times before, Scotty, you know, the 72 Hebraic scholars sat in Alexandria around about 340 BC, rewriting the Torah. Palmyra was around then, although in a basic form. Not as you see it today. What you see today was mostly built during the first century, during the Roman occupation. However, that doesn't take away its beauty and its history of it. So I would be interested to see what the Israeli take will be on this.
I will too.
Two great questions.
And of course, Netanyahu, who came and spoke to the Congress on the invitation of the Congress, thumbing his nose at Obama, and he and Obama don't get along anyway, and there's a lot of bad blood going on there because of some of Obama's policies. But Netanyahu came and spoke to the Congress, and he said, if you enter this deal with Iran, he's clearly stating their position on the Middle East. And I am still, I don't care what nonsense anybody wants to shoot across my bow. And I want to talk about shooting across a bow in a minute in a totally different story. But if anybody shoots nonsense across my bow, BS about Israel being aggressors and Israel attacking and all of this, keep in mind, I don't care what people did 70 years ago, 75 years ago. I was not part of the Palestinian mandate. I was not part of discussing. All I know, no matter what started it and how Israel became a nation, Israel is a nation today. Where I live and breathe, and most of us were not there when it came together, but they are a nation today. And it's a lot like I look at, and I'm just going to bring up this. Don't, let me finish my point here before anybody pulls me off or segues me. It's like the Native American culture here in America. And I've said it before. Were there atrocities committed by white Europeans who settled and founded America against the Native American culture? Absolutely, yes, there were. But living today, 150 years after most of that happened, and the nation as it sits today, are you willing to give up, say, your home because it sits on ancient tribal land? No, most of us aren't going to do that. That's a problem that existed in the past, and we are now all here together in the present. The Native American issue. It's in the present. We're all supposed to work together now to make it work because we can't go back to the past. There's no way to change it back. All we can do is deal with what is. Same thing with Israel. Same thing with the Middle East. All we can do is deal with what is in the here and now. To say, I need to act the way things were 100 years ago would be ridiculous. Because right now, I can tell you, most of us would condemn Islamic extremism for wanting to live the way they did things 700 to 900 years ago. We cannot live in that mentality. We have to live in the here and the now. And so all of that to say is that when I look at Israel, I see Israel as a nation that has a right to exist, a nation that is defending itself. I don't care what people want to say about the Golan Heights or the Gaza Strip and all that. Yes, there's lots of politics mixed into all of that, and there's lots of things that are being done right or wrong from either direction. But right now, for the most part, Israel exists because it fights against those that wish to destroy it and continually does so. And I believe America should continue supporting them because they have a right to be there. They have a right to exist, and they have a right to stop people from trying to wipe them from the face of the earth. And when you've got Hamas, which is part of the greater, you can take all of them as far as I'm concerned. They're one big heap of steamy offal. Let's use that word. Hamas, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram. You take all these groups and put them together. They seem to all have at their core this desire to wipe Israel, not only out of the current state of Israel, but to wipe them, eradicate them from the planet globally. And that is the charter of Hamas, has said. Our charter is to destroy Israel and to wipe every Jew off the face of the earth. That is their charter, folks. And these are people that would you negotiate with that kind of person in your own neighborhood over something? If he wished for your death and the death of your family and that you must all die in order for my charter to. Now, let's talk. Now, what would you like from me? That's nobody you're going to be able to negotiate with. And I'm going off on a tangent, so let me stop that. I said, let's segue into this whole thing about shooting across somebody's bow. And did you know, John, I think you probably already know this, and Rocky, that five Iranian boats fired shots across the bow of a Singapore flag cargo vessel in international waters, not in Iranian waters, in international waters in the Gulf. On Thursday, this was today, and it was unclear if the shots hit the vessel. After the shots, the cargo vessel turned into the national waters of the United Arab Emirates, and where that country protected it using its Coast Guard. So what's Iran doing, John?
What the hell are they doing? One could have a knee-jerk reaction here and say, my God, Obama's got it wrong. And Netanyahu's got it right, and Congress got it wrong, and the Senate's
which
got it
I
wrong.
Which I kind of believe. Netanyahu's got it right and Obama's got it wrong. But proceed.
I actually think there's a power struggle. The brokering of the Iranian deal, the nuclear deal, was too quick. It came out of nowhere. And I said this when it came through. It didn't ring. There was something wrong with it when they brokered the deal. And I still believe that there is something happening behind the seal here. I think there's a power struggle taking place in Iran, and I think what we're seeing is cracks starting to emerge within first the military machine, and this is the Navy, of course, and that there are certain not a coup. I don't think it's going to be a coup. I don't think it's going to be a revolution. I think it's going to be a complete reversal of the original revolution where we saw the Shah take place. And I think what we will see over the coming months is more of this intervention in the Persian. We're going to see more shelling of freighters, and we're going to see an intervention take place there with more American frigates, freighters, and so forth. And also the British Navy will be involved. And this, I think, is a build-up to allow the international military might to build up its capability in the Persian Gulf that will help the uprising in Iran. And I think that is what's happening. And I think that was on the table when the Iranian nuclear deal was set. And I think that's what Obama's got up his sleeve.
Do you think this is a lot like what Putin is doing by flying into British airspace?
Good God, no. I think Putin's got a rat up his ass. That guy really needs someone really needs to slap him around the face and say, grow up, get some balls, deal with your problem. You if you want to play with the big boys, then you're going to have to play with the big stakes.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. We got just some very slight lag between you and I. Sorry about that, John. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Why do you think then, and I noticed this, and I even did this. Remember, has it been 2 years since this happened, or was it last summer when Putin wrote in the Washington Times an op-ed piece? And I think it was in reaction to, wasn't it Obama's Syrian policy 2 years ago? I think it was two summers ago, but I could be wrong on that. But everybody in the United States started saying, whoa, Putin's kind of cool. I kind of like this Putin guy. Didn't know much about him, but I like him. Rocky, I don't know if you were guilty of that, but I certainly was. And there is still a modicum of respect that I have. I have respect. Let's put it that way. I have a healthy respect for Putin, not because I agree with everything he's been doing in the last year now, but because this guy is a leader. He's doing something. He's making concise decisions, whether you agree with him or not. And I'm not saying I agree with what he's doing. I'm just saying that Hitler even made concise decisions. Hitler was a much better leader than some people I know in the United States politics. And watch, I'll be an anti-Semite and a Nazi now. Watch this, John. The criticism will come out. Headline on somebody's blog, Scotty Roberts admires Nazi leader Adolf Hitler.
You put your head on chopping block.
There it is. There it is. But here, see beyond the words, folks, and listen to the point, is that Putin right now is somebody who displays leadership, whether you agree with his leadership or not. He is a leader because he does things and gets things done. And he's kind of thumbing his nose at everybody else.
I don't think that's the case.
No,
if that was the case, then he wouldn't have reacted and wouldn't have backtracked on the Ukrainian problem. He would have just continued and would have put his arms up in the air and said, yes, I've got troops in there. Yes, I'm going to take Ukraine. What are you going to do about it? But he didn't. He backtracked and said, no, we've got no troops there. Sorry. No, it wasn't us. And then we slapped sanctions on him. We crippled his economy, crippled his complete oil machine.
Okay, okay. I'll accept that. That's more recent turn of events.
He's ratcheting up the military might. He's now flying sorties over the Scandinavian countries. He's sending submarines off the Scandinavian coastlines. He's sending sorties over Scotland, which we've now scrambled our tornadoes to intercept. And this isn't the first occurrence either this year. I mean, there's been numerous occurrences of his bear. I think it's called the bear. The bomber planes that he's been sending over the Scottish airspace. And to be honest with you, he needs to back down. There's enough problems in the world without Putin playing silly buggers. He just needs to sort out his own political problems. He needs to sort out his own economy. He needs to say sorry to the UN, get the sanctions lifted, and get on with business. Play the game. Stop being the hard one left in the corner because no one wants to play with you anymore because you smell. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Wipe yourself down. Clean yourself off. Say you're sorry. Get on with it.
And what about that wacky UN?
Oh, please. Someone should let ISIS into the UN and get rid of it. Get rid of it and let's start again. Let's wipe the slate clean and start
again. And folks, ladies and gentlemen, in the BBC News today, we'd like to report that ISIS defaced the UN building in New York City. Moving on to the next story. The Simpsons is in its 27th season.
You know, if we were to lose the UN, what would happen? Nothing.
Rocky, too bad you didn't have a cricket soundbite. The UN has been dismantled. Moving on.
Speaking of the UN, what is the UN's involvement right now with what's happening over in the Middle East?
Actually,
stop, or we'll say stop again.
I said stop.
I'll blow my whistle.
If that doesn't work, I'll get my truncheon out. And I'll wag it at you a few times. And then I'll say stop again.
You are a very nasty organization.
I'm telling you, stop.
Yes, and as Sean Coe just put it in the chat room, the U.S. would continue being the world police.
But then,
and the UN, Mickey Rhea over in the chat room just said the UN wants to be the world government.
Oh,
I would agree with that. They want to be. I would agree with that.
That was the original concept. That concept, though, has unfortunately, that's gone. It doesn't work anymore. The UN is what it is. It's got a nice collection of teak furniture. I quite like the wooden benches they have in there. It's quite nice, very, very teaky, very 1950s. I think they should turn the UN into a museum.
And a reporter in the South of America, that would be Thomas Fusco, has brought up the fact to us that there has been a scallywag heist of shrubbery in Shaftesbury. And now moving on to the UN news. Well, I think we've expressed our feelings about the UN. And you know what? It's time for our break. Can you believe it? It's top of the hour. Folks, you're listening to The Situation Room with John Ward over there in Sweden.
That's me.
He's usually in Egypt. And we've got Rocky Stucci, just a stone's throw from me over in Hudson, Wisconsin.
And that'll be me.
And me, Scotty Roberts, right here in The Situation Room. We're going to be right back here on the IPBN-FM.com Alternative Talk Network. Sit tight.
I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about the special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. And what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, and 57 is not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but a drink smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Fast Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? For nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com, to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. And everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Yet every move he makes, another chance.
right, folks, we are back from our break. This is Scotty Roberts, Rocky Stucci, and John Ward back with the Situation Room. If you missed the first hour, it gets a little... I got to tell you right now, I put my hands to my face, and my face is hot. I've got to be red in the face from some of the stuff that we talk about.
Watch out for that anti-wrinkle cream.
I'm using that, John.
Or it's that, yeah.
It's working well, by the way.
See, I don't use that anymore. There was a time in life where I should have used that to prevent what's happened already. So it's too late. You know, it's like putting lipstick on a pig.
You said it, brother. You said it.
No matter how glossy and red those lips are, it's still pork. So anyway,
if you're listening in now and you're just tuning in and you missed the first hour, I think you missed the best hour.
And Rocky, there is a way that people can listen to the show after. Is there not?
Absolutely. You can. There's many different ways. You can actually go to tunein.com. We have podcasts there. You can go to stitcher.com. We have our podcasts there. But what we strongly suggest is that you go to IBPN-FM.com.
IPPN-FM.com.
Thank you, Scotty.
Is that
It's not NIP. I know that.
Just go to our website, and on the homepage, we have access to all of our articles or past shows, podcasts, or you can just go to IPBN.podomatic.com. Thank you. Hey, you know something really quick before we get into something else? Yesterday, listening to Jeffrey Daugherty's show last night, he said something that really went home. It really stuck with me.
Oh, man. And isn't he... Doesn't he grow on you real quick?
He does. I'm going to admit it out loud. I'm going to say this publicly. And I did. I messaged Scotty last night after his show, and I told him, I'm like, boy, you missed a powerful show last night, because he was talking about a lot of things that I do in the field of work that I do on the side. But he said something that really hit home, and it really relates to a lot about what we're talking about right now. And that would be, what is a shepherd's favorite food? It's the sheep.
The sheep.
Well, actually, it'd probably be bread or cheese.
You know, John, you always got to ruin it. You know,
my granddad, he was a shepherd, and his dad before him, and his dad before him. And, the main diet of a shepherd would be what he would carry to him and to the fields. And that would usually be bread and cheese and a pail of ale. I wouldn't see him carrying lamb.
It's that shepherd's.
How would he refrigerate sheep. It?
Oh, never mind.
What would it be? A slice of lamb sandwich?
I could just hear John, little Johnny Ward, growing up. But Daddy, that's my girlfriend.
Oh, he'll go run and find his nanny.
Don't make her for dinner.
Moose.
My nanny said to me.
Oh, John has the woosa. I see.
I'm just realigning my chakras. There's
when you hear John say woosa, folks, he's not saying anything. He's actually, that's his breathing exercise to realign his misaligned chakras, which Rocky and I like to do on a regular basis.
Okay, so John, when you're ready to talk, let me know and I'll cue the crickets.
I'm sorry, what was that John said?
And folks, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Ward.
The live studio audience.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't know why. I'm going to go over to Jeffrey's show, I think. I'll be his sidekick from now on. I think that'd be pretty cool, actually. I could just sit there and talk about demons all night long.
Oh, I'm sure Jeffrey would love to have you as a sidekick.
I'm sure he would, actually. I think I might. I might go over to Jeffrey's or Thomas's show. I could be Thomas's sidekick. Sure they would welcome me with open arms. Or even Sarah Sutherland. I could go over to her show. I've got a sexy enough voice to compete there.
No,
Rocky and I have first dibs.
We've already come to that conclusion, John. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And by the way, if you haven't listened to any of those guys, folks, you need to. They're right here on the IPBN. Alternative Talk Radio Network. And go look them up on our site, IPBN-FM.com, and look under shows. And I think that's what the header says, shows?
Radio shows.
Radio shows. Go look under there and you'll see all the hosts that we have doing radio shows throughout the week. And you'll have to listen to them. And by the way, Jeffrey Dougherty just wrote me privately, John, and he extended you an invitation to head up the John Ward Bible Study Corner on the Christian Whistleblower Show.
There you go. You see, I've got friends in high places.
Jeffrey yes, Dougherty. You do. Well, speaking of friends in high places, do you know Kathleen Fiore?
Before you start, I just want to backtrack. Right. Because I think
shoot my segue all the hell. Go right ahead.
Same here, man. I know the feeling.
Man,
it's a bit of a conspiracy theory as we go live right now.
All right.
If the audience is listening, if you have access to your Google, your internet, whatever you're doing, whatever you're on, go to the BBC homepage and bring up the article on the RAF jets that escort the Russian aircraft. It's just gone up. And you'll see a picture of the actual Russian bomber that has been intercepted. Now, look at the tail wing of the bomber. And it says BBC, poo, CNN. Now, isn't that a bit of a conspiracy theory, boys? Watch this. It says on the... I can't believe this.
Moving on.
So, Scotty.
Oh, okay.
Who? Yes, yes, that is an amazing story, John. The CNN and the BBC together on the tail fin?
It has to be a conspiracy.
It has to be.
I think it's a conspiracy. And if you look at the cockpit, you can definitely make out there's Michael Jackson and Elvis Presley that are pilots in it.
It's being flown by Leonard Nimoy.
No. Bless him. No.
Bless him.
Please, continue with your
story. Well, no, John, I actually did think that was a very good story.
I thought that was very good, actually, and I just noticed it. I've just brought it up, and it's there, plain to see, in front of my very eyes, BBC, poo, CNN. And I think
poo, poo, CNN?
Yes, poo, poo, P-O-O, C-N-N. BBC, poo, CNN. So
what does that mean? What does that mean, CNN? You just broke up on that. What was that? What's the significance of that?
The BBC poops on CNN. I think that's what it means.
Oh, whose sign was it?
Oh, for Christ's sake, have you been listening to anything I've been saying? It's the BBC. Oh, Christ. Listen before one of us dies, okay? There is the article on the BBC News of the Russian bomber. The picture that they're showing of the Russian bomber on the tail of the Russian bloody bomber, it says in black bloody lettering, BBC, poo, P-O-O, C-N-N. And I think it's kind of a conspiracy. I think it's a very synchronistic. That's all. Move on with your segue into some dullard bloody topic that you're going to bore us with, probably biblical or something.
Okay, Scotty, you're up. Hey, by the way,
Rocky,
we're going to talk a little local politics. I have a feeling about that because I have some clips. And somebody had a question in the chat room about what your guys' thoughts about Ben Carson.
About who?
Ben Carson.
Oh, Ben Carson. I thought you said Van Carson. Ben Carson. I like Ben Carson. I think that he is obviously Dr. Ben Carson. He's an intelligent man. He is, I think he would bring a lot to the presidency, but I want to say this. And John, pitch in on this as far as political figures go. Do you think political figures need to? Is there a necessity for them to be charismatic, or is intellect alone and a firm hand on the world geopolitics and domestic affairs, is that enough to carry a politician these days into high office? Or do they need to be charismatic? I think Ben Carson lacks a little charisma.
I think there has to be a harmony between the two. There has to be a harmony. But to win the hearts and minds of the people, you have to have a certain personality. You have to be able to be a salesman. You need to sell yourself first before you sell the ideology of the politics that you follow. First of all and foremost, the people have to love you. They have to be able to believe in you, trust you, that yes. what you are spouting is true. Regardless of what the topic is, they have to be able to trust you first and foremost. So, yes, charisma, personality is foremost. A good sound. I mean, take for instance, I mean, hell, you all voted in Bush twice. The guy was as dumb as two short planks nailed together.
I would disagree with that. I don't think you can be dumb and become the president of the United States. Same with Obama. I don't think Obama's an idiot. I just think he's an elitist.
Mm-hmm. No. No, I don't agree with you.
Well, Ben Carson threw his hat in the ring for the president of the United States on the Republican ticket, of course. He's an American author. He's a retired neurosurgeon. That should tell you something. How many exciting conversations have you had with a neurosurgeon? No offense to our neurosurgeon listeners out there, which I'm sure we have a lot of. But he's somebody who he made a speech at one of the prayer breakfasts a couple of years ago and got a lot of notoriety for that and his conservative points of view. And I see him as a commentator on the news every now and then. And he's very soft-spoken. He's a gentleman. But I think you need and this is hailing way back in the past, and folks, you may be able to get this reference or not. He's got to be a Teddy Roosevelt type to become the president of the United States and to effectively sway voters to your corner. You've got to have the charisma of a Teddy Roosevelt, of a Ronald Reagan, of a Bill Clinton. I don't think Obama had the charisma. He has a little bit of that charisma going for him. I think Obama was elected for totally different reasons other than being good at what he does or being charismatic. I think it was a symbolic vote that got him in, and it was symbolism that carried over and kept him in office for a second term. And I think that's why you're going to see a huge sway away from the Obama sort of philosophical politicking. And I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, we also do another. There is another Republican candidate that just came as well as Carly.
Yes.
Carly Fiorina or Fiorina.
I think you pronounce it Fiorna.
Fiorna.
I think it's almost like you just gloss over that second I in her name.
Fiorna.
She is somebody, if she's serious. Now, I think she. John, didn't you say that you thought her putting her hat in the ring to become president of the United States on the Republican ticket was more of a publicity stunt for her new book, which came out a while?
Most commentators that I was looking through, when she threw her hat in, I think it was May the 3rd or May the 4th that she did so, the morning that it happened, because she broke the news on a morning
May 4th.
A breakfast television show, probably BBC poo on CNN. I don't know. Crickets. No crickets. Good. But yes, that she was bringing out her book and that this coincided with her throwing a hat in. So it was a publicity stunt. But I don't think that's the case, actually. I think she's got some good politics behind her.
Well, listen, I heard her talking long before her book came out and before the May 4th announcement. I didn't even know she had made the announcement yet. That's how obsequious it seemed to be at the time. But she is a folks. She's a former business person. She's an executive who worked for, was it Lucent? No, AT&T. And Lucent, L-U-C-E-N-T. And it's kind of an equipment technology spinoff of AT&T.
See,
and,
why didn't Scotty get crickets? That's what I want to know.
Because
he's babbling on here, but he doesn't get crickets. I mentioned something that's newsworthy, up to date, and actually, you know, happening right now, and I get crickets. He babbles on about Lucifer and some other woman who wants to throw a hat in for being a president, and he gets no crickets.
Well, she wants to become the president, but I think the unique thing about her is that she's a woman who is a smart woman, intelligent. She's been in business. She's been in corporations. She's a corporate executive. Now, some people would say, oh, I got to scratch her off my book just because of that alone. But no, I think she is somebody intelligent who brings something to the table. And she has been a huge critic of Hillary Clinton, who is running on the left, has thrown her head in, obviously, in the ring for the Democratic nomination for the president, which, and she's the only one on the left that's put her card in the hat, so to speak. And yet Hillary Clinton's got some problems. And
well, she's a feminist and a liberal for one, so that's
Fiona.
They are insurmountable problems.
Fiona's been a heavy critic of hers because Hillary Clinton wants to run on the feminist. She wants to run on a gender ticket. As Fiona might say, you know, there's not a whole lot that Hillary Clinton has really accomplished. She's had some great positions, but please list for me her accomplishments. And this is one of the things that has come up. Now, she actually blasts Hillary Clinton. I was listening to a news interview recently, and these are I pulled some clips, and Rocky's got these clips handy. And I want to ask you all listening, and you, John, and you, Rocky, as well, do you think Hillary Clinton's been hiding from the press? Have you noticed that she has done no public press conferences in the month since she has announced for the presidency? And every time you do see her, it's a very orchestrated setting with orchestrated hand chosen people to play people sitting at a cafe. And that was, by the way, uncovered. The people questioning her at the little cafe were actually her own handpicked people to ask those questions in the public cafe, not the people who actually lived there in that town. And so, and with all the, shall we rise it to the level of scandal, all the scandalization, the scandalous things going on around Hillary Clinton right now, she has avoided the press. Now, with Carly Fiorina, I was walking by the television and saw this little news clip on her just yesterday. She said Hillary Clinton has answered 8 questions since she announced her presidency a month ago. 8 public questions, and all of those very manipulated questions and answers. She said, I've answered 206 different questions in the last month, and since she announced her candidacy less than a month ago. And most candidates are out there. They're doing interviews live on some of the big news talk shows. They're doing recorded ones, and they're answering a hell of a lot of questions out there. I just saw something on Jeb Bush, a big interview done with him, and the man was more candid than I ever thought the man could be. And I had been against Bush, just the concept of another Bush running for office, I thought would be a really bad thing for the country. But he came across as a man, and he even answered that question. He says, look, he says, I think for myself. He says, I think I can offer something. He says, I've been a successful governor of a state. And he said, I think I can offer something in the presidency. And he answered a lot of questions. Now, I've got a little recording here of Carly Fiorina, who is a woman running for president against a woman running for president. And she will maintain that the woman on the left is running on. Remember, I've said this before, boys, where Hillary Clinton, when she was just before she announced, she said, don't you think it's time that a woman becomes the president of the United States? And I sat back and I said, is that it? That's your platform? Because she didn't have anything else to offer. And now here is Rocky, if you can cue up clip number one.
Yep, all set.
This is in answering the question, do you think Hillary's hiding from the press? Here's what Carly had to say.
Well, I think she's in hiding because perhaps she knows what you just showed. In other words, that people have this image of her. They think they know her. They think they want to vote for her. And the more they learn, the less they want to vote for her. And so if you're in that situation, you don't want people to know anymore. You certainly don't want to answer a question about foreign governments making donations to your family foundation while you're serving as Secretary of State. You certainly don't want to answer questions about why you had a service in your basement. You don't want to answer questions about Benghazi. I mean, there are a whole series of questions that she really doesn't want to answer, and so she is hiding.
Wow.
And I think she is. I think Hillary Clinton's hiding from the press, but the people are still going to give her a pass. The people who support her, like the people who support Obama, they give these people a pass. And I would bring up some examples on the right, but I don't have them at the tip of my fingerprints. Fingertips, because I'm dealing with what currently is, not what happened when the last president was in or the president before him. This is current, and I'm sure everybody can bring up their examples to support Hillary or to talk about why Carly Fiorina is a bad candidate. But somebody in the chat room, I think I saw somebody just say something. Was she fired from her position? I don't know that. But Mickey Ria says in the chat room, maybe she was making a comment about Hillary's sexuality, the first female president. Well, I also think that Carly Fiorina wouldn't mind being the first female president, but she's not running on gender. Now, let me ask you, Rocky, would you want to be elected to the highest office in the land simply because you were like the first emotional meatball to be elected to the office? And that's why you got elected.
Scotty, I am honored right now. I the emotions just overtook me when you called me the emotional meatball. Thank you. My brother.
You're welcome.
My brother.
You're welcome, my brother. John will scoff at you now.
You know what I'm looking for?
Emotional.
I'm looking for a president who's going to act on the cruelty that's happening throughout the world. That's what I'm looking for. I know we need to be looking at local politics in this country, but I think the world destruction is going to play a big part on what happens within the United States.
I think so, too.
Did you know that Hillary does have a theme song? I don't know if you guys have heard that.
I haven't. Let's hear it.
All right. Here we go.
Does that go along with what the press has dubbed her Scooby Van?
There you go. See, I come up with information for you guys. Information that is unattainable through the internet. I can get it. Thank you.
And by the way, I've been mispronouncing Carly Fiorina's last name. Jeff Daugherty just corrected me. Fiorina.
He kind of yelled at you when he said that, too.
He did. It's like in all caps with exclamation points. And you dumbass afterwards. I didn't know he used that kind of language. But
I'm going to go to his show, I think. It's much better people. Probably better pay. Probably get dental there as well.
Yeah. Jeff Daugherty, if you give dental, you might have all three of us over there.
Ain't that the truth?
Please continue.
Well, I tried. And Mickey also actually parrots a sentiment that and I don't use parrot in a bad way, mimicking a sentiment that I have. Mickey says, you hire on job qualification, not due to ethnicity or gender equality. And I have to agree with that. And, you know, there are people that said, Fiorina. Jeff Daugherty pronunciation is that she is attacking.
Are you
Hillary
having a stroke?
Clinton. I'm sorry, what?
Are you having a stroke or something? What's wrong with you?
Woosa. Woosa. Woosa.
Can't think of your own breathing treatment, so you have to steal.
I can't. I stole yours because it seems to work. Well, at least for you. Yes, people are saying that Fiorina is attacking Hillary and is lacking in some kind of credibility because of this. And I don't think she's attacking her at all. And Rocky, if you pull up clip two from this interview, here's what she has to say about people really accusing her of attacking Hillary.
People say, well, you're attacking Hillary. First of all, I'm not attacking Hillary. I'm asking questions. I'm asking very legitimate questions about her transparency, her trustworthiness, her track record. I'm not asking because I'm a woman. I'm asking because I come from a world where those count. I come from a world where actions speak louder than words. I come from a world where we are held to account for our decisions. I come from a world where people ask, are your actions consistent with your words? So I'm asking questions that I think are entirely legitimate. The fact that she's held a bunch of highfalutin titles is interesting. The fact that she hasn't accomplished anything while she held those titles is more interesting.
Whoa.
And there it is. Is that an attack or is that somebody looking at Hillary's record and saying, here's what I think of Hillary Clinton's record?
That's a formidable opponent. That's what I think.
That is a very formidable opponent. Now, somebody suggested that. Go ahead, John.
I hope she's able to build on that and continue the momentum.
I think she would be a stellar candidate. So far, I like her above the rest. I liked Donald Trump because I like somebody who brings business acumen. I don't care if he's a narcissist or not. If he's a narcissist, that will better America. And you know what? Anybody in the public eye is going to be a narcissist at a certain point. The thing I have differentiated between a Donald Trump type of narcissism and an Obama type of narcissism, I believe Obama is a narcissist in that he does not believe that anybody who believes differently than he is could possibly be right about anything. And as a matter of fact, do you remember this, guys, this week? Did you see this, Rocky? Did you see this? That Obama just this week was castigating publicly Fox News because Fox News, in his opinion, is destroying America because they're only telling their version of the way they see his presidency, paraphrase it.
I did not hear that, but wow, it's all Fox News' fault.
It's all Fox News' fault. And I would say it's interesting that Fox News is the only one that's pulled out as being a news outlet that expresses its opinions about things. And then again, that's not usually... Fox News isn't usually, it's not their commentators, it's their op-ed people that are the ones that opine so greatly, which the same is said for, remember Keith Olbermann on MSNBC? Oh my God, that guy was the biggest opinionated, well, whatever, let's move on from that. So that's what Obama's claim was. And now, did you also hear... you know, Elizabeth Warren has been somebody that the left has been bandying about for the presidency, but they have defaulted to Hillary Clinton. And now there's more talk coming up about Elizabeth Warren. And there was in the same interview where Obama was being asked about Fox News, or where he made the statements about Fox News, where he called them out. So much so, by the way, that CNN reported on it about his statements on Fox News. But he made the statement about, and he was referring to Elizabeth Warren, and he called her Elizabeth when he was referring to, well, obviously Elizabeth has her own political opinions, and of course all the feminist groups that have supported Obama, like Now, this organization has now come out and decried him for making sexist statements, which I found kind of interesting. But here's some. This is from that same interview with Elizabeth Warren, and she was asked about this, about Obama using sexism, and then she was asked about her views of feminism, and I think that this is very interesting. So I want you to listen to this. This is clip number three, Rocky. This is again from Carly Fiorina.
A feminist is a woman who chooses her own life. The life she chooses could be to have five children and stay home and homeschool them. The life she chooses could be to go on to work. But a woman should have the opportunity to choose her own life. Unfortunately, these words get politicized. And the word feminist got politicized by the National Organization for Women and now is clearly a political organization. They want to put forward a particular political agenda. So, for example, Hillary Clinton during the 2014 elections said when she was campaigning against Joni Ernst for Bruce Braley, she said, well, it's not enough to be a woman. You have to be a woman who believes. And she then went on and listed the liberal orthodox. And that is how these folks think that unless you fit their orthodox, you don't count as a woman, you don't count as an African American, you don't count as a Hispanic. And of course, that's ridiculous. We need to take gender and race out of all these conversations. We need to unify the nation once again. But Hillary Clinton will try to make gender the issue in her election.
Boom. And let's go out to break. Folks, we're almost overtime on break. You're listening to The Situation Room. We'll be right back. Sit tight.
Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink.
That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red, I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy, not the water. It's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurant.
That does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big hot pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black. I was set on fire. I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of end of my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The wounded warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month, and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I've come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please, call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Yet every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow.
You know, we're talking about American politics here, which bores the hell out of John. I mean, he's got a lot to say when it comes to geopolitics, to European, to Middle Eastern, but while he sees the importance of American politics, I think we've just bored him. I think we put him to sleep last hour. John, are you there? See?
Crickets is what I've got to say. American politics is all sensationalized. It's all hype and tripe. It's as interesting as watching paint dry.
Oh, and the election of Cameron, the re-election of Cameron was not sensationalized.
No, it was not. It was very hard-nosed, journalistic fantasticness, if there's such a word.
Oh, I saw the video you put up with him, with the his head put on dancing people celebrating.
Exactly. That was done. I don't think it was part of the agreed journalism, shall we say. But I think it was a nice way to celebrate. And good luck to him, and God bless him, and all in the Conservative Party. And we look forward to the next so many years of his wonderful reign over the United Kingdom.
So, Rocky, I just want you to know that the Queen looks down on your American politics.
Well, she does. So as I was saying, you know, please continue with your American politics before I've
Well, I do have one more clip from Carly Fiorina that I want to play. Fiorina. Fiorina.
How can you vote for someone if you can't even pronounce their name?
I thought you said something different. That sounded a lot like my wife talking there for a minute. This morning, she passed me for the first time ever. She said to me, and I won't say the actual word because we're on air, even though we are not yet FCC regulated. I could say it if I want to, but I don't want to turn off our audience. Although they probably use this word, too, because it's one of the best words in the English language. It can be used as a noun, an adjective, a vowel. It can be used as anything you want to use it as. My wife walked by after watching some news with me, and she said, F Muslims. And I said, what? She said, if there is one thing ISIS has succeeded in doing here in the West, she said, it's making me hate all Muslims. And she said, yeah, now getting down to the bottom line, she said, I don't really hate all Muslims. She said, but that is the outcome. She said, and she actually asked the question, Rocky, that you asked during the break. Do you think that part of what they're trying to accomplish over there is to make the world hate them? And to hate all Muslims, so we start a war against them?
Well, you know,
they're trying to draw us into a religious war.
I don't hate Muslims, but radicals can kiss my. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. And as John and I said earlier, when you asked us the question, Rocky, John and I have some good friends who are Muslims. So it's nothing to do with Islam itself. It has to do with the radical extremists. And John, you were saying something. I didn't quite hear you. I heard you in the background.
No, it wasn't important. It's just me. Don't worry. I don't say anything that's important. I don't contribute either. So just move along swiftly.
Rocky?
I do actually have one item that I can say.
I think we offended John last segment. I think we offended him. He likes to bully us usually. He bullies us. But when we turn the tables on him, I think he's hurt. I think we've hurt his chakras.
Well, he needs the woosha.
Can I just say this news item? It's just come out on the BBC.
Oh, sure, John.
It's been out for 2 hours now. So it came out just prior to us going live. NATO has pledged to counter hybrid warfare from Russia. The alliance has said it must adapt to the mixture of conventional military tactics, subversive campaigns, and cyber warfare that Russia was using in the Ukraine. NATO says that Russia is backing rebels in the Ukraine, a claim denied by Moscow. Free Baltic countries are preparing to ask for permanent presence of NATO troops on their soil to act as a deterrent to the Russian military. Now that is a very interesting development. Hybrid warfare combines different types of threats, including conventional subversion and cyber, said NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg. When the world has changed, NATO has to adapt, he said. I think someone's just wrapped up the ratchet, guys. I think Russia has just taken a few steps too far, and I think NATO is responding. And, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next coming weeks.
What'd you say, John? No, I'm kidding. I agree with you. And sorry. I just had to keep it going just a little bit there. Sorry, brother. I had to retract that very quickly so he didn't get mad at me. And I agree with you. Why do you think that's happening?
It's a direct result of Russia flying their sorties over British airspace. And also their naval campaigns off the Scandinavian coasts of Sweden and Finland. And I think it's a direct result also of their incursions into the Ukraine, which is continuing, by the way, and the continuing denial that's coming out of Moscow. I think also that the 70-year celebrations that took place in Moscow this week, I don't know if you saw that in America. I don't know if your news covered it. But did you see the military parade? Now, yes. We haven't seen a military parade in Moscow, the likes of that since it was the Soviet Union. And it was quite worrying to some analysts. I know that the analysts were quickly out there doing headcounts, counting machinery and equipment and so forth, and trying to put names to them, etc., because there was quite an impressive display of armament. And I think this is a direct result. I think NATO
I got to tell you, I have rarely, if ever, in memory, I'm straining my memory to say, have I ever seen Great Britain or the United States have a huge military parade where they parade the armies by with all their missiles and all their tanks? I don't recall, like, the way you see in Russia and the way you see in some of these other countries.
No, we don't need a penis extension.
But that,
because
that's right.
We are the empire. You don't do it because we own you, and you're part of the empire still, along with Canada and the rest.
Oh boy!
It's like
Teddy Roosevelt said: "Speak softly and carry a big stick in your pants." So keep it covered.
Okay, and just a little tidbit before you change radically and go into some segue that nobody understands.
All right,
I didn't know this, but Sarah Brightman, you know Sarah Brightman?
Yes.
The famous soprano?
Yes.
She was going to the space station.
I didn't know that. Well, was she going to test operatic singing in a vacuum?
Get this. She was going as a tourist.
Really?
She was paying $50 million.
Holy crap.
To go as a space tourist.
You know what I would do if I had $50 million? It would not be spend it on going to the space station for a couple of days. I might support the Gebel El Silsila project. I might throw the Paradigm Symposium for free and let everybody come and eat dinner. I don't know. I might even put money into Rocky's little radio station thing.
Thank you.
So,
you
know, if I had $50 million, I could think of a lot more things I'd want to do with that other than, unless she has that much disposable cash.
Well, one's got to think how much money she's made off Phantom of the Opera. She must have made literally gazillions off that.
Well, obviously.
And she was meant to fly out. Will fly up on September the 1st, but she's cancelled it due to family reasons. I mean, who would you? Hello, I mean, yes.
Maybe now's the time to hit her up for a loan.
Where are you going on holiday? Oh, I'm going to the Bahamas next week. Oh, really? I'm going to the space station. Oh, but I might cancel because my tortoise is ill.
I'm going to the backyard with a tent.
I mean, seriously, you just don't – there's some things you don't cancel in life, and flying to the space station
– I see your point there.
$50 million is not something –
I can't make the space flight thing. Can I get a refund on my $50 million ticket? We'll have to dock you 20%.
Yeah. You know, well, plus the rocket fuel. I just don't see how it's going to – well, it's just ridiculous. But there you go.
Well, do you think that could be offending to people who have to train for a very long time to be able to go into space, where some outsider from the public can say, I'm going to pay you enough money for me to go on that vessel?
No, I think this is the way. I think this is a good way of educating the public that there just isn't the funds available within government circles for projects like the space station, like archaeology, for instance. And Scotty and Rocky, you know this more than anybody else, and the problems that sometimes we face with funding. We have to look outside of the standard traditional institutions for funding, and we have to look at the new private enterprises, new private sponsors. And I think this is where Sarah Brightman, as a tourist, as a space tourist, would inject $50 million into the space program. I think that's a very hefty payday. I think it's a good way of promoting the space program, and I think it's a good way of actually garnering extra dollars to continue the project.
You know, speaking of archaeology, you're exactly right, because there was just, I can't remember, it was in Rome or it was in Italy, where they actually had to bury a site because they lost their government funding.
Yeah.
And because that's got to blow. That's got to blow.
Seriously.
And before
I've spent 4 years digging up this archaeological site, now I have to bury it because I lost my permit.
And the one thing I want to say before we end the show, because I know we haven't got long, but I want to say my 10 pennies worth are about His Royal Highness, the Prince of Charles. Because this week he's had his private letters published after the court.
Oh, man.
The public domain. And I feel for the man. I really do. There were his private letters between himself and the Prime Minister. There is, I must admit, I sit on the fence when it comes to the point whether they should be public domain or not.
Did he use the Effenheimer in any of them?
No, he didn't. He was merely expressing his concerns with a range of different subjects. He never once in any of his letters lobbied the Prime Minister or prejudices the Prime Minister into trying to go one way or the other. He merely exercised his right as the Prince of Wales and wrote to the Prime Minister and voiced his concerns. I'm just fed up to the high teeth with these NIMBY bloody liberals out there, these 99ers who go on about getting rid of the royal family and this, that, and the other. And each, you know, give the man a break. He wrote to the Prime Minister about serious issues that he believed, from a personal point of view, needed addressing, and he felt that he could express them in the best way possible, and that was in writing to the Prime Minister, so they would be kept. There would be a record. This isn't a secretly taped telephone conversation in some dirty hotel somewhere. This is public record. These were letters handwritten by His Royal Highness. They were sent to the Prime Minister, and that had been made public, which is a good thing, I think, because it shows that the Prince is actually forward thinking about certain subjects. And I just want to say that that's what I want. There we go. That's it.
And at the end of my letter, I would like to say, Prime Minister, that this has been, of course, yours truly, Charles Philip Arthur George, the Prince of Wales, eldest child and heir apparent of my mother, Queen Elizabeth, God save the Queen, known alternatively in Scotland as the Duke of Rothesay, and of course in South West England as the Duke of Cornwall. I'm the longest serving heir apparent in British history, and by the time I'm 94, I may have a shot at the title of King.
Hear, hear.
Where are the crickets? That's what I'm asking. Where are the crickets?
I thought that was very pertinent. I thought it was a very important addition to the show.
I really enjoyed that, Scotty.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank God. Thank you. I should be running for Prince of England.
Tessa Jow to consider Antarctica as British territory. I thought that was interesting. Please continue.
I was waiting for the crickets. Sorry. Well, you know, I wanted to get in one more little sound bite here before the end of this show. And this has nothing to do with anything we've talked about for the last 23 minutes. However, this is again from Kathy Fiorina. And she was asked about the WMDs in Iraq. And we were talking a lot about the Middle East and the things that led up to what exists nowadays and blah, 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 and all of that. Now, remember George W. Bush in, was it 2003? Was that the year that he launched the Iraq War? We moved into Iraq after 16 months of giving Saddam Hussein warning that we were going to be coming in. So it wasn't like overnight. But remember, the intelligence said that there were weapons of mass destruction, which have been a constant. There's been a constant stream of foment against that since we discovered there weren't any. And it was very interesting that everybody who seems opposed to it now in Congress, and those even at the time, within the year of that, they turned on him, on George W. Bush. But keep in mind, of the joint House and Senate, there were only 5 members of Congress that did not vote to support George Bush to go into Iraq. Only 5 out of 238 off the top of my head. So she was asked a question about the WMDs, and I want to play this for you because this is somebody who is now running for office, and this is how she would answer that question, because she would ask, would she have voted to go into Iraq knowing what we know now. And this is what she had to say.
The intelligence was clearly wrong. And so had we known that the intelligence was wrong, no, I would not have gone in. And I have said publicly on many occasions that going into Iraq was mismanaged and coming out of Iraq was mismanaged. It is also true, having known the head of the CIA at that time, known the head of military intelligence in the United Kingdom at that time, it's also true, in President Bush's defense, that the intelligence community was pretty unified in their strong belief that Saddam Hussein did have WMD. He did not. The intelligence was obviously highly faulty. And so knowing that now, no, I would not have gone.
Well, and there you have it. And John, what do you think of that whole WMD thing? I have been under the impression that we did find evidence that WMDs did exist. And of course, they had 16 months to get rid of them before we went in.
I was just about to say, I thought there was WMD. I was led to believe that there was there wasn't the arsenals that we were expecting to discover, but there was a significant arsenal of WMD discovered within the Iraqi borders. And it doesn't change one iota, really. I mean, I agree with her. The whole situation, the whole Iraqi war from beginning to end, was completely mismanaged on all sides from every partner of the coalition. And I think, as we always say, you know, we learn by our mistakes. And let's try and do a better job next time. Let's roll on Syria and Iraq. Let's go back in again and let's see if we can get the job done properly. But I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't.
I don't. What do you think? We've got about 4.5 minutes left of this show. Give us a quick prediction, John. This is your area of specialty, and I like to hail to you in these areas because you've got your finger on the pulse of what's going on with the hidden hand, if you will, in the Middle East. What is give us a 2-minute rundown, your prediction of what's going to happen over the next 5 years in the Middle East?
Oh, my God. 5 years.
You got 2 minutes.
Seriously? No.
Yeah. What do you think?
No, 5 years is far too long. There is so much that can happen in 5 years, and there's too much unpredictability in a 5-year span. In the next 2 years, what you're going to see is Saudi Arabia becoming the forceful kingdom within the Middle East that it's always wanted to be. Watch that space. Saudi Arabia is going to take a prominent position, and America, especially the presidency, is going to have a hard time trying to rein Saudi Arabia in, both economically with regards to the oil and OPEC, but also with regards to its military might and the way in which it's using it within the Middle East. And I think what we are seeing in Yemen at this present moment is only the tip of the iceberg. I think they've got a taste for it. And I think the new king has got a taste for it as well. And I think he's going to take that even further. They've already got boots on the ground in Yemen. I think it's only a matter of time until they put boots on the ground in Syria and start to squash that. And then I dread to say this, but if there is a political struggle going on in Iran, I can see Saudi boots landing in or outside of Iran and helping that, along with what we've already discussed about the international coalition turning up in the waters of the Persian Gulf. So there's a lot that can happen within the Middle East. Again, it's all fluid. Who knows what's going to happen? ISIS is the linchpin here. We don't know which direction they're going to go into. It would be interesting if someone was to come out. I haven't seen anything on the channels of information that I receive, which is not mainstream. But I haven't seen anything coming out yet who's done any serious research on the funding of ISIS.
I haven't seen much on that lately either.
Is wanting. That information is missing from the demographics there, and somebody needs to look into that. It was interesting that someone made an announcement, I think a couple of days ago, that ISIS has over 46,000 Twitter accounts.
Yes. And Twitter's been trying to close a lot of them down. And
as soon as it closes, they open another 10. That's the problem.
Well, that's right. That's right. It's hard to squash them. It's like squashing an anthill.
I go back to the same statement I made weeks ago. we should be closing down internet and all other communicational devices in Syria. And
yes,
it should be closed.
And why are we not doing it is the big question that
because
I
because that's scary. Don't you think that's scary?
It's Sarah Soderlund. Hey, how you doing?
A voice was coming from that.
Why would you say
that's scary? Why would you say that's scary?
I think when any last resort of a government or a people, which we'd like to think is one and the same, but we all know is not, is so fearful of something that they have to shut down lines of communication, I think it also borders a line of censorship that keeps us from knowing what exactly is going on. And so I don't like that.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I think you I agree with you to a point because I've lived through it in Egypt when we had all of the communications shut down with us on the second week of the revolution. We lost all internet. We lost all mobile connections, all landline connections, all television, all radio, everything. It was basically a blackout. And the big kill switch was hit up in Cairo by the Mubarak regime. And so I've lived through that. And I understand what you're saying. And I do agree with you on that sentiment. But with regards to Syria and ISIS, I think it's high time. I think it's way overdue. We should be hitting that. We should have hit that kill switch months ago. And I think it's about time we hit the kill switch.
I feel a little out of my element because I am by no means an ISIS expert, but I can tell you that in here in Minneapolis, it's a huge hub for recruitment. Especially in the prisons where I tend to be in and out of for school. And there's a lot of people who kind of find a refuge in that ISIS family. It's like a gang mentality almost. And so
Thank you for saying that because I don't know if you listened to the show earlier, but this is exactly what I was talking to Rocky and Scotty about, that it's about time that we turned inwards and looked at our communities and looked where this radicalization was taking root and try and understand it, take these people out of the radicalization and steer them in a different path, show them that there is a peer that they can look to, show them that there is parts of the community that still has a value, even though their iman has let them down, their family has let them down, their peers have let them down, their friends have let them down, and they feel they have no resort but to turn to this radicalized religion, which you say, quite rightly, gives them solace.
It's about a gang mentality.
Yeah, I think we need to be. I think we need to be engaging with the communities more.
Here in Strawberry Shortcake Land, I wish that could happen, but I feel like that's so unrealistic because, especially when you consider America, the United States, this huge size, just the size of it and the scope of it, and the communities here. And I know this is probably very anti-American of me to say. But we really just don't care. You know, our news headlines are about the Kardashians.
Right, right.
That's what we were talking about a little earlier in the show, is that we go out and we mow our lawns, we go to see the movies, we do this because we don't have time. Oh, yeah, that's crazy what's happening over there. Hey, I got to go meet my friends for the game.
Right. Well, and so, we don't even know, like, I don't have television in my house. I get 4, 5, and 9. So we watch Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood and Jeopardy. And I don't ever really see much. I mean, if I'm not listening to your guys' show, which I love to do because I think it's so important to know your source and to have someone like Dr. Ward, who's, you know, overseas, or someone, you know, Scotty, where you've been to Egypt on these journeys that you go to and you've been in these places of parts of the world, or you're living there now, or you're traveling there or whatever, that you can get kind of that firsthand of what's going on, because I am so untrusting of any media related anything that I've almost turned off. And I think some people, maybe they like to be distracted by it, but I've turned it off because it's like, I don't really know, you know, what I'm supposed to do or what my neighbor should be doing. Or, you know, when you say that we need to look inward towards our community and to kind of fight this radicalization, to me, there's almost a romanticism in the idea. And I think that's where people do find themselves in gangs or in things like ISIS, because there's movement there. You are getting off of your couch. You're doing something more than mowing your lawn. You have a cause. Because Americans, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself and my generation, but, you know, we don't really have a cause. You know?
It's like I said a couple of weeks ago, guys, and Sarah, is that I think American youth, the new generation, the millennials, if you will, don't have anything to believe in. They don't know what to believe in.
Well, and it's so, I'm such, you know, my show, well, me being on your show is probably not the safest place for me because I am sexist, I'm racist, and I'm anti-liberal, and I really...
Yes. I like the last one.
Well, see, you've just gone up a rung. We have now put you on a pedestal.
Well, there you go. But that does not make me very popular. And so I really struggle with that in my peer group. Like, for example, right now, getting into my doctorate program, I'm really excited to learn some of my peers. And the politics has required me to join, you know, sorority organizations, which is really not my cup of tea, but it's a requirement. So I look at these gatherings of very smart people, and I try, in a sense, think of myself like in a skull and crossbones, you know, like I'm in the secret upper echelon of intellectual, intelligent people, that I'm going to go here, I'm going to have a good conversation, it's going to be meaningful, this is a mindful, you know, use of my time. And it's the same people. It's the same people at the grocery store. It's the same people that are watching the Kardashian show, or, you know, or did I see what was on Young and the Restless? And so for me, it's like, man, it's this degenerative hope. And so when you say that we don't have anything to believe in, you know, our society is not necessarily a religious one anymore. We're not necessarily one of morals and values that stem from anywhere that's a tradition. You know, we're supposed to be a melting pot, and now we're a salad bowl, and now we're not a salad bowl. Now we're a melting pot again because we want to be friendly to everybody. And we're so distracted. You know, like I've recently lost some good friends of mine through the whole Black Lives Matter thing. Because I get really frustrated with that. I get really frustrated with racism, and I'm very fearful that we are being distracted. I'm a big false flag person. I really feel like this whole Black Lives Matter thing is a distraction. And that's what scares me. It makes me very fearful of like what's really going on. And it makes me sad for the Black Americans. You're not African American unless you're born there, that the Black Americans are gonna, you know, I wouldn't call it a martyr, but the Black Lives Matter thing is going to be a false flag, and it's very scary to me.
You've won me over on that, and we've talked about that right here. So
absolutely,
no, great, great stuff. I wish that we had another half hour to our show so you could keep talking, but we don't want to work into your time.
Well, you know, if you guys are available, you're more than welcome to, because today's show, I don't know if it's tonight or today, depending on where you are and what you're listening to, but I'm talking about fear. And so I'm kind of interested in what you guys are fearful of.
Scottish.
Interesting.
Brave Scotty.
Well, let's do this.
So brave. Oh, brave.
No, I'm not.
Moldy cheese or necromants or what are you?
Especially Wensleydale. Let's go out to break here. Folks, we're done with the Situation Room, but we might be back a little bit with Sarah. Sarah Soderlund coming up, and you stay tuned for Mysteries of the Mind. And she's going to be talking about what fears you.
Fears you.
So, folks, join us here next week at 3 p.m. Central Time for the Situation Room, followed by Sarah Soderlund's Mystery of the Mind at 5 o'clock, which was 7 minutes ago. So we're going to go out to break and start her show officially. See you later. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
See you, folks.
3, 2, 1.
The Intrepid Paradigm Broadcast Platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of eclectic programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows,